I was kind of cruising through some stuff the other day, and I came across this article. I don't even remember where it's at. I found it on a news. It's ABC 13 News. I don't know where ABC 13 is, but I ran across this article that says 1.5 million brew beer at home. This is, I guess, according to the American Home Brewing Association. I didn't even know that there was an American Home Brewing Association. We'll have to look into that too. Yeah?
It's a good organization.
Yeah? Are you a member?
Absolutely.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so am I.
You are? Why the hell didn't I know about it? But I was surprised to see it says 1.2 million. The headline says 1.5, but the article says 1.2 million home brewers out there, guys. Over 5,000 breweries in the United States now. Unreal. So, I guess the hobby is definitely picking up. Back in the saddle again, back from hiatus. We're good for another 6 weeks. Welcome to the Meat House. We're listed on TuneIn Radio. You can listen live there. You can also download their app, take us with you if you want. Or if you want to wait for the show for a little bit later on, you can go to iTunes, get it there, Stitcher Radio. And, of course, we live at themeathouse.com. You can also pick up the show there after we're done and over with as well. Call-in number is 818-921-4680. If you got something to say, I'm glad to yak with you a little bit. We are on Facebook, The Mead House. Just go up to the little search deal up there and just type in The Mead House. You'll find us. Ryan Richardson, back from his wayward adventure in California. We'll talk about that here coming up shortly. Aaron Martin in the house, Mississippi. Chris Spencer along for the ride. Jeff Schaus with us. And, of course, my name is J.D. Webb. Jeff, were you able to catch up with anybody on Facebook this week?
I've got a couple quick shout outs here. Over on the Mead Makers page, I saw that Jamie Pringle Blair was posting on a stuck batch that it stuck around 10:40, and thanks to, she said, some extra nutrients and a good restarter, she actually managed to get it restarted. We've talked a time or two on restarting a stuck batch and problems with stuck batches and things like that. So I wanted to give her a quick shout out just to say, hey, congratulations on getting that going again. I know that's a trying issue and it's a pain we all deal with here. Then over on the Mead group, I saw Warren Early had an interesting brew. He was making up banana split mead, used a ton of cocoa nibs, it looks like, and he hasn't actually put the bananas on that yet. It looks like he's putting the bananas on in secondary, but the color on this was really interesting. It was kind of a yellow brown, very clear. He hasn't used any fining on it whatsoever. Just a really nice color. And the idea of using a lot of cocoa and some banana flavors together in a mead sounded pretty interesting to me. So I wanted to give him a quick shout out too.
Didn't Chris have something of an awkward looking color? What did you call that thing, Chris?
Oh, the chocolate orange?
Something or other, yeah, that looked like...
Oh, yeah, that was awful.
Like goat vomit, I think you said?
Yeah. it looked like Himalayan yak puke or something.
There you go.
Wow, a banana split. That sounds interesting. I love a banana split, be interesting in a mead, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cool. Thanks for the update. What are we drinking tonight? Let's start off with Jeff. What'd you pour tonight?
So, for my own part, I mentioned this on Facebook. Just after our last episode, I picked up one of those carbonation caps that we were talking about, I think it was last time, and was playing around with that, and the Saison that I made late last summer, I think it was, was intended to be a lot more carbonated than it came out to be. For whatever reason, the carbonation, the bottle conditioning just didn't take off the way it was supposed to have. And so I carved up a few bottles of those, and I'm enjoying one tonight. It's the carbonation does give it that extra little something that I was hoping for. And I'm just really pleased with this one. This is easily one of the best things I've ever brewed.
Cool. Excellent. Aaron, what'd you pour?
Tonight I'm drinking a porter. This is the Alberta Clipper Porter from Great Lakes Brewing Company in Cleveland, Ohio. Kind of an interesting porter. It's brewed with chocolate and raspberries, two flavor combinations that really go well together. Kind of subtle raspberry flavor that's kind of there in the background, and the chocolatey porter flavor, just a real nice smooth drinker for sure.
Cool. Mississippi, I know you've been busy with the scalpel here lately. You drinking coffee tonight, or did you manage to get some into that alcohol cabinet?
No, I did something interesting. You remember my sticky situation with the decoction and the Bock that I did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm finally to a point where I'm trying to decide how it's going to turn into a braggot. So I took a little traditional and mixed it with it, and I'm trying that out tonight. So
there you go.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be better brewed together, but the Bock by itself, Jeff, I think you're going to be proud of it.
All right.
Was it you or your wife that was the big fan of Bock?
She was the Bock fan, yeah. I enjoy a Bock from time to time. She's the one that's a strong Bock preference, though.
Well, she'll be happy.
Wasn't he hoping that thing was going to come out like the worst thing ever? Wasn't he like praying that thing was going to come out the worst thing ever so he didn't have to go through all that again?
I don't know that I'm going to go through it again, even if it's good. I'm thinking the melanoidin malt may be the way to go.
Well, and there are some hybrid decoction mashes that aren't quite as involved that I think I've gotten good results with too. So, there's a ton of different ways to skin that cat.
Mm-hmm. Hey, all right, Ryan, what's in your glass tonight?
I'm drinking a hibiscus and ginger mead. It's a commercial one, and it is very, very strong on the ginger. It's not bad, but it's definitely for ginger lovers.
Yeah. Does it, I've had a couple of ginger flavored stuff and I get this, it's almost like a medicine-y type taste. Do you get any of that or no?
You know, they tried to balance out that spiciness or I guess whatever you'd call that ginger flavor, with the tartness of the hibiscus, and it's not bad. I'll tell you, It could probably take a little carbonation, and then I think it'd be real nice.
Cool. Well, I'm drinking the one that Ryan referred to as very refreshing. This is my orange braggot, and it's coming along very nicely. Half of it's in bottles, and the other half is in a keg. I managed to put one case together. Kind of put it away. Going to save that for the summertime. In the meantime, I'm drinking the stuff that's in the keg. Ryan's going to give me a little more input on it here in a little bit, but I really like this. This is probably one of the best things I ever did. And I am going to do another one. And maybe change it up a little bit. I've got a couple of kits ahead of it before I get there, along the same lines as the orange thing, but this one is not the orange cream that I intended to have, you know, when I started out. This is just straight up a beer kit with orange honey in it and orange peel. No lactose, no tricks, no vanilla, no nothing. And I'm very proud of this one. The next one I do, however, I want that one to come out more like a cream soda, like an orange cream soda. And that one we're going to add some tricks to it, some lactose, some vanilla beans, and see what we can make of it. But so that's what I'm doing. And while we're talking about Ryan, we might as well just get right to it. Ryan, you know, it was indeed a pleasure to have you and Andrea out this way in California. Ryan stopped by on his way to, we'll call it Middle California, up around the Santa Barbara area, and had emailed me before his trip and said, "Hey, I'm coming out. Let's get together for lunch." And so we met up here at a local burger joint, Islands Burger, that my wife and I frequent quite often, and really enjoyed some nice company, some good burgers, and some cold beer. What did you think of that whole experience, Brian?
It was the lunch was great, and the company was even better. Andrea and I loved being able to stop and meet with you, and we had a wonderful time. I think we hung out for almost 2 hours at the restaurant, just kind of chatting, and then JD gave me an assignment. You know, he went out to his truck and he handed me about, I think he said, "This is enough to keep you drunk for 72 hours.
And something like that, yeah.
And handed me a couple of bags full of his stuff. And I've got tasting notes because a lot of that stuff never made it out of the Golden State. a lot of that stuff stayed right there. So then we drove up and we spent 2.5 days in kind of a central coast country, you know, Los Olivos, Buellton, Solvang area, yeah. And then a half day in Santa Barbara, and went to a lot of vineyards, a lot of wineries, and a couple of breweries. We ended up visiting 10 vineyards over the course of the 2.5 days and 2 breweries. Stopped at Firestone Walker, who has their barrel house out in Buellton, yeah. Which is where they do all their barrel aging and souring, which was great. And then when I went to one of the vineyards, a great little one called Sunstone, just Los Olivos, no, Santa Inez.
Santa Inez, yeah.
And
that's where Michael Jackson's house is up there in Santa Inez.
Oh, okay. So we're there, and the guy pouring wine at the tasting room he's got these sleeves on, but you can see coming up to the sleeves that he's got full sleeve tattoos. And he had this, you know, a younger guy, and didn't look like a winemaker. You know, maybe I'm a little stereotyping here, but he didn't look like a winemaker. He looked like a brewer. And I was chatting him up, and somehow our podcast came up, and we're talking, and he said, you know, that he was a brewer. And he had made some mead in the past, and I kind of gave him a couple of little tips on how he could, you know, make a mead a little better. He said he kind of had a little off flavor. It sounded like a little stuck fermentation when he'd made it in the past. Well, anyway, you know, the wineries out there, the tasting rooms all close, you know, about 4 o'clock, you know, some close at 3, some close at 4, some close at 5. And he was getting ready to close, and he asked where we were going. We said, oh, you know, we're always open for recommendations, you know, and we try to have some plans when we travel, but we also try to, you know, leave ourselves open to be flexible. And he said, he goes, let me tell you, what you should do one of the nights. He goes, if you're a beer guy, and now I know you're a good beer guy and a good mead guy, here's what you do. You go into downtown Solvang, and he goes, my homebrew shop, you know, the homebrew shop that supports my local club is called Valley Brewers, and it's in Solvang. And he goes, that's where our homebrew club operates out of, you know, that's our home shop. He goes, you go into the back, there's a door marked private. And he goes, you walk through that door that says private, and we operate a speakeasy out of the back room. We got all these nice beers on draft.
I love it.
Isn't that something?
So awesome. We, you know, we did that one of the nights. One of the nights we were going to dinner. Anybody who's seen the movie Sideways, we were going to have dinner at the Hitching Post, and before dinner we said, oh, let's have a drink. So we went into the. We walked in there, walked into the homebrew shop, walked past the door that said private, and they had, oh, I mean, they must have had 30 different beers on tap. I mean, they all looked like they were one-off homebrewers. Wow. And it was great. It was a real, real nice experience, real great. Awesome. And so, you know, you never know how far this podcast can take you.
How did Andrea like the Able Skivers?
She liked it a lot. She did. We thought it was great. Yeah, the Solvang restaurant. We had a great breakfast there. Everything was really good. You know, one of the things that was interesting too is out there. There's kind of three schools of thought on the vineyards or the winemaking. And the first school of thought is that some of these master winemakers don't use commercial yeast. They use the yeast that is on the grapes naturally. And they say that really highlights the grape, the wine. So some of these guys, they will, after the grapes have been harvested, they'll even grow something in between the vines, like rye or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then before the growing season starts, they'll till the rye back under just to replenish the nutrients into the nitrogen and back into the soil. And they said that also gives them a really healthy yeast environment that they're able to do that. So I thought it was really interesting that some of these guys completely just use natural yeast out there. Then you've got some vineyards that will use a natural yeast and then they'll finish it off with a commercial yeast. And then, you know, you've got some of the other vineyards or some of the other wineries out there who say that they only use commercial yeast. You know, they go, we need consistency for our large batches, and we are only doing, you know, the commercial yeast. Now, I've kind of gone back and forth here using the words vineyard and winery, and they're not interchangeable. I'm using them interchangeably here incorrectly. There are vineyards, there are wineries, there are winemakers, there are grape growers. You know, in the same way that a brewer, you know, might buy his barley, buy his hops, that kind of a thing, and not grow them. Right. There are a lot of winemakers out there who do not grow their own grapes.
Right.
So there's about 250. If I'm not getting the numbers mixed up, there's about 250 grape growers out there, but then there's about 750 winemakers out there.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys are buying grapes and making wine with them.
That little place that I told you about, Sort This Out Winery, right there,
yeah.
It's right there in Solvang, right there on that main, on that, right down the street from the Solvang restaurant. You look at his information, or he's, you know, it's a winery, but he's the same way. He buys grape juice from different growers, and makes his wine that way. So he's one of those wine makers, not necessarily a vineyard owning winery type guy. So, you know, you can drive, I don't know whether, you wandered any further north of Solvang, but I mean, you can drive up the 101 freeway and go through Santa Barbara and Solvang and all that, and not even know that you're even close to a winery, or a vineyard. So there's a lot of little hidden gems up there that I know of. So.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Oh, I hear a little one.
Yeah, she just wanted to say hi.
Hi there. sounds like it might be bedtime or nap time, I guess, huh?
She just leaned up.
Well, in that bag of goodies that you took back up north with you there from Sherman Oaks here. Let's start out with the now you got two of the bourbon barrels. You got the what we call Bourbon Barrel 1 and Bourbon Barrel 2. Both of them identical kits. One was made with 6 pounds of honey added to the recipe. The other one I held back, I think it was a couple of pounds of DME, and substituted, I don't know, 3-4 pounds of wildflower for that, and also used a different bourbon. Number one, BB1 had, I believe that was the Eagle Rare. That was with the 6 pounds, and then, that was the Evan Williams, and then BB2, which was the 6 pounds of honey. That's that 13% deal. That was made with Eagle Rare bourbon. Tell me about
it. So just help me understand real quick. The BB1 you said had how many pounds of honey in it?
BB1 had, I believe, let's see, I got to remember where I pulled that out of the box because they both had the same. BB1, I believe, was the 6 pounds of honey. That would have been the one that was very high in alcohol, like 13%. Probably a little on the sweeter side than the other one.
Yeah. So, I'll run through all of these here. BB1 had the mouthfeel in that one went on for days. I mean, that had an extremely creamy, full, I mean, just a huge mouthfeel. To it, there was a lot of chocolate that I got out of it. A lot of chocolate. It was very, very smooth, and it had. What surprised me was that there was, for as dark as it was, there was a bit of acidity. And I don't, that was there. I was surprised by a little bit of that acidic, that was there. It was not in any way off-putting. It just, I didn't anticipate that was going to be there. But overall, I thought BB1 was very good. And then for BB2, it had this one was of the two was the consensus favorite. I thought BB2 was more balanced,
It had a little bit less of a mouthfeel, which was okay because BB1 had such a huge mouthfeel. It was, I got some bittersweet chocolate notes out of it. I got a little chocolate-covered cherry in there, too, that I was that I picked up. It was extremely drinkable, and it was very, very enjoyable, and it was incredibly smooth. It was that's one that I mean that you know craft quality right there. That one was amazing. Now you'll notice that when I'm combining some notes here of what was tasting within those, neither one of them was there an overt taste to me or Andrea of bourbon.
Surprisingly, surprisingly, I find the same thing.
Yeah.
I found the same thing. And I added now keep in mind that for those that are listening live and those that are going to be listening later, these are two identical bourbon barrel kits from Northern Brewer. The only change that I made, I didn't go with the recommended bourbon. They recommend Maker's Mark. I've had a lot better bourbon than Maker's Mark. Like I said, the one kit, I just added 6 pounds of honey. That's the only change. And then use the Eagle Rare bourbon. The other one that I did, Bourbon Barrel 2, I pulled out 2 pounds of dry malt extract, substituted it with 2 pounds of wildflower honey, and that's the one that I used, the Evan Williams single barrel. And it was, looking in my notes here, I know I've got it written down, I think it was something in the neighborhood of maybe 8 ounces of bourbon. I used more than the recommended bourbon along with the American oak in that bourbon. So
now, if you were to do this one again, I just loved BB2. I thought it was just magnificent. If you were to do BB2 again, I would at the point of bottling or kegging, do the first half as is, you got your 8 ounces in the batch, and everything's the way it is. And you bottle or keg half of it just because it's so good, and you know it's good. But then in that second half, I'd double the bourbon. I'd put an additional 8 ounces or whatever, whatever that would be, 4 ounces, in that second batch just to see what that does. But that was very good. That I really liked that one.
Good.
I got 2 bottles of the orange of your orange beer, Orange Braggot.
Yeah, the Orange Braggot.
The first bottle this is the weirdest thing. For any of you guys, let me go back to the trip for a second here. If you haven't been to the Central California coast and wine country, and you looking for a place to go, I highly recommend it. It was a lot of fun. It was great. I'm not that big into wine. I mean, I enjoy wine. I know a little bit about wine, but by no means are we wine enthusiasts or wine experts or anything like that. But it was just a really fun trip. Now, when you're out there, it looks like they pour you this little drop in a big, big glass. And the pours are anywhere. Some of the wineries will pour you 1 ounce. Some will pour you 3 ounces, but they pour you, 5, 6 or more of them. We went to one place and the guy was the owner that did a tasting, and he wanted to taste all 12 of his wines. Well, anyway, if you go to a place that's got a heavy hand, you know, meaning they're doing about 3 ounce pours and they're doing you and they're giving you, you know, 5 wines to taste, by the time you hit your second vineyard, you've had a full bottle to yourself.
Yeah.
So, you know, now this, the first time that we opened the orange one, it was after a day of wine drinking and a dinner where we had, you know, some more wine. But it,
so you had no idea what you were drinking out of that bottle by that point, right?
No, I'm just saying I may have had a little palate fatigue is all I'm trying to say. When we did that, the first bottle of orange that we opened was very smooth, very refreshing. Just a really, really nice beer. Day and a half later, opened up the second bottle and tasted it because I wanted to taste everything again with a fresh palate and make sure that, you know, everything was there. And Andrea had a tasting note. And as soon as she said it, I couldn't stop tasting it. And she said it tastes like an orange Tootsie Pop.
Okay. And
it did. It tasted exactly like an orange Tootsie Pop. That second bottle. Now, okay. I didn't pick it up with the first bottle. So I can't tell you if there was a difference between the two, but that's what I got out of it. Orange Tootsie Pop. Okay. Then JD gave me this bottle of this blueberry, and he said, "This is interesting stuff."
I think I said this stuff is going to taste like shit. I think that's what I might have said something like that. Or I might have said, I don't know what I said, but I knew it was going to be a weird experience.
Weird. That's what you said. You said it'd be weird.
Yeah.
Well, when we tasted it, it tasted like a blueberry pie. It literally tasted like a blueberry pie. You've got this this pie filling type flavor. It literally tastes like blueberry pie filling that has come out of the oven. It's also got on the back end, you know, I don't know how much of it is theater of the mind because the front of it tastes like blueberry pie filling, but you almost get this graham cracker pie crust on the back end. It literally tastes like you're drinking a blueberry pie. It's very thick. It's very strong. It's very, very bold. And it needs something. I think it's like an after dinner dessert drink is how Chris would probably love it. You know, he loves that sweet stuff. It needs something. It's either it's an after dinner dessert drink, or it needs something extremely bold to balance it out, like a very, very, very pungent cheese or something like that.
Okay.
I don't
particularly
remember the blueberry, but I would probably bet I had a hand in it. Did I, JD?
I don't know. This was made, here's the recipe. 2 gallons of apple juice. This is 2 gallons of just regular old table juice, like Mott's. Okay. 4.3 pounds, which is what I had in the freezer of blueberries. And I started out at 1.120. It finished at 10.16. I used 71 bean. This is one of the 71 beans that actually went all the way. Okay. I used and I put 1 can of apple juice concentrate in after it was all done and finished. And I let
that's
you know, see.
That's the blueberry sizer that we did.
Yes. Yes.
That was your take on that one. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. and it was a about a 2.3 gallon size batch when it, you know, all down, you know, comes to it. But and then it got, you know, it got a regular feeding of nutrients for made O, like 4 grams each, three times. The final one was like 3 grams at 10:34, and that's it. So I don't know where the pie crust tastes like pie. I have no idea.
Yeah,
that's funny.
And then he gave me a couple bottles of his Graf.
Yeah.
and
that's
like,
some weird,
this is
that's some weird stuff, isn't it?
This stuff, this was the last bottle I tried. JD also gave me a bottle of traditional and a bottle of his wine, and those both came back home. So the bottle of traditional and the bottle of wine, I don't have tasting notes on. But the Graf was very interesting. It was it had lots of carbonation, and it also had tons of apple up front. Just you know, like biting into a crisp apple. And then
stop right there for a minute. I want to go over to Chris. Chris, you know, my stuff is about what do we figure, 2 or 3 weeks older or 4 weeks older, or yours is like 4 weeks older than mine. Okay.
Yeah. You're about a month behind me on that one.
Yeah. So at this point, I mean, we're probably a couple of months into this now. I don't have the page up on my notes here, but remembering your tasting about this time period, is that what you got too? Because I, you know, this thing changed, like, you know, like people changed their pants. Okay. It seemed like every week there was something different about it. I remember you talking about that very thing. Now, did you get a lot of apple?
I'm going to guess that what Ryan is tasting now is probably about where I tasted mine for the last time. And I didn't really get a ton of apple on mine. There was some apple in the aftertaste, more or less, but nothing really up front. And that's when I decided I'm not tasting it anymore. I'm putting it down, and I'm going to forget about it for a while. So I haven't tasted it since. But there was a period, like from the time it was finished until it was maybe 2 or 3 months old, there was periods of time when it was nothing but apple. And then you taste it the very next week and there was no apple. And then a week later it was all apple again. So it just came and went the whole time.
Okay.
So maybe Ryan got lucky and hit it when the apple was forward. I don't know.
Well, and Ryan, this was this Graf was put together on November 30th. So go on with your tasting notes from the Graf.
Sure. So again, lots of carbonation, apple up front, and then in the middle, I put crystal malt ? Because I forget if you use crystal malt or not, but I thought that's what I was tasting in the middle.
Yes.
Okay, so I did. I got a lot of crystal malt in the middle, and then on the back end, I got a little bit of soapiness in the finish, and you know, I know you probably weren't, you know, it's not that you didn't rinse the glass that you're putting it in. The way that I describe it is a lot of people, when they eat cilantro, cilantro tastes like soap to them, or has a soapy taste to them.
100%. 100%.
Hate it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Some people get that when they taste carrots and that kind of thing. But cilantro is the big one. Now, I worked at the headquarters of a very, very big restaurant chain. And one day our food team, you know, was doing kind of a tasting panel. And they have these different tasting strips. They call them of paper. And you can put them on your tongue, and depending on what you taste and that kind of a thing, different people taste things differently. And there's different ways that you can test that. So that's the way that I kind of say it is, I got this soapiness in the back end in the same way a lot of people get soapiness out of cilantro. Now, I don't know how many people that affects, but, you know, you could probably ask somebody else, you know, on the street, and they would say, you know, I don't get any soap out of this. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. But that's just the way that I perceive it. So that's what I kind of got. I got a lot of apple up front, and then I got that crystal malt right in the middle, and then that soapiness on the finish.
Interesting.
So overall, is that something you would like to drink or no?
You know, for me, let me ask you. So Jeff and Chris, you guys said that when you taste cilantro, you get that soapiness. My guess is you guys don't eat a lot of cilantro.
No, when I go Mexican, I tell them no pico de gallo because it tastes just like a bar of soap.
Mm, wow. Yeah.
I'm on the moderate end of that. I can tolerate like the rice at Chipotle, even though it is just inundated with cilantro. There are some places that go like there's the salsa they put on the table is so heavy on cilantro. It's just like, did you rinse this after you put it through the wash? Because it tastes like ass.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Cilantro tastes like soap to me. Yeah.
See, I don't get any of that. And when I make guacamole or my homemade pico de gallo, I put a bushel of cilantro in mine. I love this stuff. Interesting. How interesting. Okay, go on, Ryan.
I was going to say, so I don't know what ingredient or what reaction between ingredients is giving me that soapy finish. But if I were able to identify that and eliminate it, I think it'd be interesting. It's the concept is something that I think is worth putting on my list to explore. But I'll want to do it in a way that I try to reduce the chance of that outcome happening because, you know, it's just, getting that soap out of it is not something I want to have a glass of.
Could something like that be related to the hops you use? I wonder.
Possibly.
You and I did the same thing. We used exactly the same recipe, hops, everything. I don't get any soapy flavor whatsoever on mine.
And I don't either, and I love cilantro, so...
but I could see possibly the isomerized hops from the boil, the same thing that causes bitterness, getting a soapy flavor. The explanation that I've been given as far as why everything tastes soapy to me when I go out to eat Mexican is that this is the bitterness of soap is kind of an indicator, evolutionarily speaking, of something we shouldn't be eating. For whatever reason, at some point or another, one of our ancestors said, oh, this is poisonous. It tastes nasty. This tastes awful. I'm going to survive while my idiot friends are eating this and are dying. So I will get to mate more and survive and repopulate the species. I don't think it has a lot of use here, but no, there is there's a level at which the soapiness is related to bitterness, and the bitterness from the hops is definitely a possibility or a possible culprit from it. Yeah. So using less of a floral hops like Fuggle and more of a piney or a citrusy hop like an American hop breed could change it, but that would really change the nature of the drink too.
Well, and the only thing different that Chris and I did from the original posted recipe was add 4 bags of black tea, just straight up, you know, Irish black tea.
And that was just for tannin.
Yeah, and I don't think that would have anything to do with it. I got to go with Jeff. I got to point to the hops. But I say that because I don't get that soapy. Now, I mean, we're talking bar soap, right? If, you know, when I was a kid, if you did something nasty or said something nasty, you had to chew on a bar of soap for a couple of minutes, and that was nasty. Okay, and I remember that. I absolutely remember that like it was yesterday, 5 minutes ago. And I just don't get that.
I just remember that. I remember my grandparents had Ivory soap, and I just thought it looked so good that I licked it. And and so I definitely remember what soap tastes like. And
if they had palm olive, you wouldn't have made that choice.
Yeah, I know. But you know, I do get that in extreme with cilantro, but I do not get it in my graph. Now that's going to be interesting because I'm going to make sure you all get a bottle or two. And, so I want to hear if it's in mine as well, because I don't get that at all. What I get the last time I tasted it was, it was just a very strange combination of cider and beer, and it was more cider than beer for sure. But it was good. I mean, it was really good. I just felt that it just needed some more age on it. I think when everything blends together and all the mellowing is done, I think it's going to be something spectacular. But I just don't think it's ready yet. So, you know, maybe I'll send you 3 or 4 bottles and you can taste one now and then put a couple aside and wait.
Yeah. Interesting. So, go ahead, Ryan.
I was going to say, so that kind of concludes the tasting and that. Now, when you were talking about your juice, that some of these winemakers will have and they'll, you know, that you can buy.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just telling you guys about how the different winemakers, some of them just use the natural yeast that's on the grape skins, and some start with that and then finish with the commercial yeast, and then some just go commercial. When I go to my local homebrew store, you know, during the North American and the South American harvest, so twice a year, they'll have pre-order forms where you can buy, you know, 6 gallons of fresh juice, you know, from either California or Italy or Chile or wherever. Yeah. And those come already, you know, inoculated with yeast. So they, you know, you don't have to toss any yeast into them. Now I've never had the conversation with them on, is this natural yeast or is this, or did they add the commercial yeast to it? But, you know, cause I've never bought a bucket of the juice, but what they say is they go, it's already got the yeast in it that has been selected for the, to bring out the best potential of that grape variety. So, you know, it'd be interesting. I think, you know, with your grape grower, you're the guy, you know, it'd be interesting to hear and talk about, you know, if they feel that the natural yeast strains that they get are strong enough and of a high enough quality to ferment that all the way through, and not need anything, additional.
Yeah, I know that. Like I said, I mean, the process is there's a big truck, huge truck that comes down and has bins of grapes. I mean, they still got the stems on them and everything. And, you identify your 100 pounds or however many pounds you order, and they put it through the destemmer and the crusher and everything. And then, you have to bring your own vessel. And their recommendation is you know, once it's in the vessel, you put Camden tablets in it. You got to leave that set for a few days. Okay. Then add your yeast, let it ferment, and then you bring it back to the brew shop and they have a press, where they, everything gets dumped into the press and end result is you go home with nothing but pure juice. Which finishes off your fermentation, and you leave it set for a year and let it age. And if you want to add oak, whatever you want, it all depends on the kind of grape juice you got too, or the kind of grapes you got. But now he also buys grapes from up and down the coast. These aren't all grapes out of his vineyard that he owns. Some of them are. Some of them aren't. He buys lots of grapes from different vineyards up and down the coast. So, I'm still kind of thinking about that. I don't know if I want to go that direction yet or not, if I'm ready for it. But, the bottom line, Ryan sent me the final text he sent me was, he says, "You are good at making hooch." I thought that was pretty appropriate.
That's the God's truth right there.
Ryan, thank you tons, man. I really appreciate it. And, I feel like I'm getting some pretty good, honest feedback. The rest of these guys, they're going to get their bottles here in a few more weeks as I get all this stuff together and get boxes and packaging and get this stuff in the mail, but they're going to get the same thing that you got. Minus the bottle of red wine, I'm going to try to stick a bottle of what Ryan was talking about. The two bottles that he took home, one was a red wine that I made. And then the other bottle is the very first mead that I ever made. And it's taken this long to taste like anything. So I'll be eager to hear from Ryan when he cracks that one open and get his notes on that one. But, anyway, Ryan, I know you had some fun out here, dude. My wife and I have been up in Solvang area, Santa Barbara, many, many times. It's a good little weekend getaway for us down here. It's so close. Solvang Restaurant, our favorite place to eat, and I'm glad you guys had a good time.
Absolutely.
I was thinking, we took a couple of weeks off, and I'm sitting here thinking, what the hell are we going to talk about for the next 6 weeks? Not that we've had any difficulty coming up with subject matter, for sure. Oftentimes this 2-hour show runs into, 2 hours and 20 minutes. A 90-minute show runs into almost 2 hours, I should say. So, I was thinking themed recipes. Okay. We lost somebody. It's like Jeff dropped out. Let me see if I can get Jeff back. I was thinking about, a themed recipe. I thought, summer's coming and this orange braggot that I made, is going to be perfect for the summertime. Like Ryan says, it's a very refreshing, drink, which I think would be perfect for even, say July 4th. But I was thinking holidays, Now, some of this stuff is going to have to age, so it might be appropriate that we start talking about it now, because I'm thinking like next Thanksgiving, next Christmas, I'm thinking something special for Halloween. You know, I'm thinking 4th of July. That's not too far off. Even a nice braggot we could put together and be ready by then. Possibly a mead even by July 4th. So I tasked Jeff and Aaron with this ideas. I really don't want to get into putting a whole recipe together right now, but just let's talk about some ideas. What kind of fruits, ingredients would you put together for, let's just say 4th of July? And I think Aaron, well, now I don't remember. I don't remember which email I read, but one of you guys had something that sounded really good for 4th of July.
It must have been Aaron, because I've been holding on to my ideas for tonight.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. I had referenced in one of the emails like a watermelon melomel. You know, I think of the 4th of July sitting outside under the fireworks, and what do you want to munch on in that type of situation? And watermelon is really the first thing that comes to mind, which kind of got me thinking just about melons in general. It seems like that is maybe an underutilized or a type of melomel that we haven't really discussed that often. And you, at least from what I've seen, you don't really see that much about melon-based water or melomel. So
there's a reason.
Is there a reason? Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you not to. Well, I made about a year ago, last summer. Yeah. Well, almost a year ago. I took a gallon of watermelon juice, or watermelon water, I guess it's probably called, and fermented that with a pound of honey. So just watermelon water and honey. And it almost, 9 months old here, it's still very, very thin. Kind of weak tasting, I'm not getting a lot of watermelon out of it, or really any. And so what I've actually thought about doing is adding tinctures, maybe a little mint, and a little squeeze of lemon or lime juice, because trying to think of what you could do to dress up a watermelon. And a couple of things that came to mind for this was maybe a little mint and maybe a little lime. You know, might go with that pretty well.
I could see that.
Yeah, I tried that. And melons do not translate well into mead. And you know me, it was not a lack of fruit, because you know how I do. When I make a melomel, I put plenty of fruit in. So it was not a lack of fruit. All I can say is freshly mowed grass. it was like drinking a freshly mown lawn.
Like drinking a hay bale.
That's exactly what it was like.
And now, is this any kind of melon or a melon in particular?
Watermelon.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know about others. I know that one.
Well, there's been, and I don't remember. I know that there was some discussion, gosh, a long time ago, back to the old show that I was on. There was some, and I don't remember the gist of the discussion or even the final result, but I do remember a discussion about watermelon. I remember there being some negatives to it. But if you could get around it, we've talked about concentrates before. What if you took that watermelon juice and boiled it and reduced it, made a reduction, and then put that in your watermelon juice? If you follow me. Okay. If you can, get enough watermelons to make a gallon of watermelon juice. and then get more watermelon and put it in a pot and boil it down, reduce it, and add that to your watermelon juice. I wonder if you could get away with something like that.
You know, and I've also thought about doing something similar to the way they approach ice cider, where they take the juice, they freeze it, and the part that thaws first, the sugary part, gets fermented out, and the rest of it just kind of gets sloughed off. It's an idea. I don't know how it would work, but it's an idea.
Okay, now keeping along with the watermelon theme here, I like the direction you're going, Aaron. Another popular thing in the summertime that my grandmother used to make all the time that went along with the picnics with the watermelon was pickled watermelon rind. Very sweet, had the sweet sour thing going on, tasted like watermelon. I wonder if that would be if you could accomplish something like, some kind of a sweet sour combination watermelon flavored.
It's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
I don't know how to get the pickle concept in there, but I will tell you, I think there are two types of people in this world, people that have tried pickled watermelon rind and people that don't know what they're missing.
Yeah. And I'll add to that pickled green tomatoes.
Pickled green tomatoes. There you go.
Yeah.
We're getting deep south now. So watermelon.
It's right up there with pickled watermelon rind.
Yeah, I love them. I mean, my grandmother, my dad's mom. Oh my God, homemade pickled watermelon rind. Oh my God, it was like eating candy.
So tell me more about that. It's something I unfortunately am in the group of people that, I don't know what I'm missing with that. I don't know that I've had
It's the white part. You peel the skin off. Okay. And it's the very thin white part of the melon, mm-hmm. minus the skin. You got to take the skin off. And then she would pickle them. And I don't know what her recipe is or her, I don't know how she did it, but, she would make up this pickling juice. And, these things would sit for like months. On end in mason jars in her pantry. And then she would make up, I don't know, simple syrup or where she got the sweet from. But you got this sweet sour thing going all at the same time. And then, of course, the watermelon rind itself is just that. It's the rind of the watermelon with the skin shaved off. And that's what it is. You can buy it in the
store.
Sounds
good. Interesting. I'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, usually in the condiment section where you'd find relishes and that kind of thing, look for pickled watermelon rind, and you should see it there.
Sure. Go ahead, Chris.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I was semi-changing the subject, but we were talking about summer flavors. The most obvious to me and much easier to accomplish would be a pina colada.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's a very summery flavor.
Oh, absolutely.
Coconut, right?
Pineapple, coconut, yeah.
Okay. Didn't somebody here have some experience with coconut? Ryan, was that you?
Yeah, that's... Yep. That is the, I've done it. I've done two different uses of coconut, that the braggot that I made that I just, bile carbonated, was a, coconut stout. So that was done with, coconut, shavings, the white flesh of the coconut. And then I toasted those. Yep.
Okay.
And then the other coconut experience I had was I tried making a traditional using coconut water. So just the coconut water and wildflower honey.
And how did the coconut come through in those?
In the first one, in the coconut stout braggot, it comes through like a coconut. You know, it got that coconut smell or aroma, and a little bit of the taste, and it kind of as intended. The coconut water traditional came out a lot like coconut water, and I forgot when I was making it that I don't really like coconut water all that much.
I don't either. Yeah, I don't either.
We've all got sucked into that before. When you get this idea for an ingredient, and then you remember you don't like the ingredient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoops.
So
and those are the ones that always turn out to be an exact representation of the ingredient.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
So, Chris, how would you approach the pineapple? I'm thinking secondary, right? Because there's a ton of sugar in pineapple. I don't know that you'd be left
I would,
with much
I
of
I would
a...
get the no. I'd go to pineapple in primary.
Primary. Yeah.
Yep, and then rack on to secondary, and I'd probably go, because I don't know, I would probably go a pound of toasted coconut per gallon.
Yeah, okay.
Because that's pina colada is just coconut, so I think maybe if you went like four to 4.5 pounds of pineapple per gallon in primary, and then maybe go a pound or even more coconut in secondary, let it sit on it for, you know, however long, taste it along and see what you get.
So how does the...
But I'm making this up as I go. I don't know. I've never done it.
Well, you're going to have...
I let that toasted coconut sit on the braggot for 4 months, and I could have let it go a lot more. Without it, you know, becoming too coconutty. But now that was only 1 ounce of coconut per gallon of liquid. So, you know, it wasn't because I was trying to be safe, you know, of not overdoing it.
Mm-hmm.
So how does the chief have your surgery schedule for the next couple of weeks there, Chris?
I can't make any pina colada braggot or mead.
Okay. Well, you don't necessarily have to make it, but I was thinking maybe you could come up with a recipe, an idea for a recipe, like what kind of honey to use. I mean, it doesn't have to be a nailed down kind of thing, but something that we can at least say, hey, you know what? This sounds good. Maybe one of us could throw it into a gallon bucket and give it a shot. So, I'm going to task you.
If I were doing it, I mean, I can tell you off the top of my head how I would approach it, because, and it would be purely experimental, but I would go with probably maybe 4 pounds of pineapple in primary, pulverize it good, and I'd probably use something like orange blossom honey, because you want you don't want something that's going to overpower either of those other flavors. So I'd probably go with orange blossom, maybe even clover honey, something bland. I'd probably start out, I'd want this thing to finish around 10:20. So I'd probably start out at about 11:24 to 11:30, somewhere in there. Ferment it out with 71B to get that fruit salad, tropical fruit, that it produces. Leave it in primary for about 21 days or maybe 4 weeks. Make sure you got plenty of pectic enzyme in there, and rack it into secondary onto a pound of toasted coconut per gallon. You're probably going to need a really big carboy or something, because that's going to be a lot of coconut.
Yeah.
And I'd just let it sit and taste it. Maybe start tasting it after a month. See what happens.
Okay. All right.
That'd be my approach.
Yeah.
4 pounds.
And you know, as far as 4th of July recipes go, the one fruit that struck me that we haven't talked about yet, that I think is really just synonymous with summer, strawberries.
Strawberry, like, yeah.
Strawberry desserts are at every 4th of July get together. My wife and I, I've resisted tackling strawberries because there's a lot of water in them, and I worry about getting a good flavor out of it, just because strawberry is also a tricky flavor to get right.
Yeah.
I have an idea for what I want to call a firecracker mead that features strawberries, and I'm not sure if I want to include a pepper with that, or make it a really fizzy carbonation drink, or where I want that firecracker concept to come from.
Yeah.
I'm noodling that in my mind.
Brian, you back?
I'm back.
Okay. I'm hearing something buzzing. I'm hearing a buzzing noise.
Yeah, somebody's cell phone or something.
Yeah, I'm hearing somebody's... Okay, this stopped. I don't know what it is. But anyway, okay. So we got a pina colada thing. We got a watermelon. We've got... And we're talking summertime here. Strawberry sounds good. I mean, I'm thinking 4th of July, something cool, refreshing, something crisp and light. I'm really digging this pina colada. I'm not a mixed drink type drinker, but I'm kind of digging this pina colada thing Chris has got going on. But moving on, I mean, there's other things besides the 4th of July. We get later on the year. I'm thinking, Halloween popped into my mind for some damn reason. I don't know why. Now, I don't know. I have no idea what kind of mead or braggot or, even a beer or whatever you'd put together for Halloween. But I mean, Halloween just kept popping in my head when I'm thinking themed recipes. So, throw some stuff out there, guys.
You know, when I thought about Halloween recipes, the idea of trick and treat really hit me.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Everything is kind of, everything I came up with is a little bit on the sweet side. So, maybe something with blackberries or a very sweet or black currant, but with some pepper behind it. Or to really stick to this Halloween mead, a sweeter mead with some ghost pepper behind it. All sounds a little bit cruel to anybody that's not expecting a peppery mead, but
I've got a black currant pepper mead that I called In the Heat of the Night. That would probably be exactly what you're thinking about.
There you go. Yep. Okay.
I had an idea for Halloween. When I thought Halloween, I thought Harry Potter. And if you've read the book, obviously it's Madame Rosmerta's mead.
Okay.
So it's basically, you'll have to interpret the description of it, but from all accounts, it appears to be maybe a semi-sweet mead with a hint of licorice. So maybe some star anise or something like that.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Okay. Licorice.
Yeah. Some pepper. Yeah.
And what? Licorice and what?
Fennel.
Fennel?
Yeah. It's an herb spice.
I've roasted them before, but. I'm trying to remember the flavor.
It's got a somewhat licorice note to it.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It's
not quite as harsh as licorice, to my mind, but it combines well with licorice.
Yeah.
So maybe how would you...
Some that star anise and maybe even some licorice root. I don't know.
So how would you work the fennel in, Jeff?
You know, there's a couple different ways to do it. I mean, it depends on how you're working everything else in. If you're doing, we're talking maybe about herbs and roots and things like that. So if you're working everything in together. I mean, what we're talking about essentially is a methaglin blend, and a methaglin blend can be complicated or it can be simple. There are different approaches to it, of course, and maybe the easiest and most precise is to basically split your batch between different herbs, let the different herbs kind of soak in secondary with these meads, and then just kind of blend them together to get the desired effect. The other, and this is a bit more fiddly approach, the other way to precisely blend these together is to just take one at a time in secondary or in primary bulk aging, whatever you want to call it, get to the level you want, and then back it off, try something else, and kind of just keep adding layers and layers and layers. Like I said, that's really fiddly. The other way to do it, and the way that I have approached a lot of my methaglin blends just for lack of time, is to blend the amounts of the herbs based on trying to make a tea with them. Get the level of the balance of the flavors the way I like them in the tea, and then use that proportional amount in secondary to brew. It's not exactly perfect, but it's pretty close.
Yeah. Okay. Fennel. Interesting. Okay. So we've got a number of ideas here kind of getting piled up.
I'm going back now. Aaron's got me thinking about that watermelon reduction.
Watermelon?
the reduction. That's a new one.
And Chris, I had one other question for you as well on the watermelon thing. So with your experience using watermelon, did you ferment that out in primary or did you add it in secondary?
Yeah, it was in primary. Now, remember, this was a long time ago, like when I first started. So my mead making practices were not the best. But when I first started, I was trying everything. You can ask my wife. I had little jugs sitting around everywhere with different things in them, and that was one of them. And it was less than stellar.
Interesting. Well, part of the reason I ask, watermelon is maybe a little bit more of a delicate flavor compared to some of the other fruits that we talk about, like, raspberries or black currants, things like that. And I wonder if maybe adding it to secondary where it doesn't go through the fermentation process, it might help preserve some of that just watermelon flavor to some extent. Mm-hmm. It might be another approach to preserve some of that.
Yeah, it could be. But what really struck me was the grass flavor. It was just so, yeah. I mean, Toro riding mowers could have used that as a promotional item.
I mean, sounds like it would smell real good, but I don't know that I'd want that, drinking that out of my glass.
Yeah, but none of the flavor that was supposed to be there was there at all. And was that due to my, inappropriate mead making skills, or was that just the way it is? I don't know. I will say that I've heard Michael Fairbrother say on numerous occasions that was one mead he would never make. So I'm assuming that maybe he ran into the same thing I did.
Yeah, I recall that too.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, and that doesn't necessarily mean it can't be done either. I mean, Aaron, I'm thinking, just whip up a traditional and then dump it in on, 3 or 4 pounds of cut up watermelon. Mm-hmm. The typical, put everything in secondary type thing. I don't know if that would work or not. I mean, the one thing that bugs me about the whole watermelon thing is that, a watermelon is like 98% water. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering, after a period of time sitting on that much watermelon, if it just doesn't thin out your traditional mead and just, you know, I mean, there goes any kind of mouthfeel you would have hoped to have, or
yeah, and that's why it struck me when you said that about doing a reduction, because in order to pull that off, you're going to have some sort of concentrate. Otherwise, you're just you're basically going to cut your original mead in half.
Well, and because the other thing too, because watermelon is so much water, it might take a crap load of watermelon to get a sufficient reduction that would even make a difference. I mean, you might be having to boil down, you know, 30 or 40 pounds of watermelon in order to get, you know, maybe a quart of a decent, heavily concentrated watermelon flavor. So,
Time you boil it, is it like boiling honey? Have you just boiled away all the watermelon flavor and volatiles, you know? So,
well, I mean, yeah, at this point, you're just looking for the flavor only. So, but like I said, I mean, you know, it being mostly water, I'm just afraid that it would, you know, I mean, I'm just, you know, talking outside of my head because I've never boiled down a watermelon before. But I'm just thinking, because it's so much water, that it would take an awful lot of watermelon to get a sufficient amount. I mean, think of it. If you're doing 5 gallons, I'm thinking you'd have to have 100 pounds of watermelon to boil down to get a sufficient amount of watermelon reduction, if it's even possible. So here's the task. Okay, somebody find a watermelon somewhere, cut it up, squeeze and squish and whatever you got to do to get the juice out of it, put it in a pot and boil it and let it reduce half, and see what you get.
See what you come up with.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if watermelons are available. I'll have to look in the store and see, because a lot of our produce and fruit and everything comes up out of Mexico. And of course they got a 24/7 growing season down there anyway. So I'll have to look and see. Maybe I'll do it here at the house, but, I'll know this weekend when we do our grocery shopping, but,
Do any of you guys ever get any of the yellow meat watermelons?
No.
You never had any of those?
No.
Nope. Well, they actually have a little bit more watermelon flavor than the red ones.
Are those what they call the Japanese watermelons? Because they get a Japanese watermelon out here that are – I've never had.
I don't know. We have there's a variety that's grown here called a Charleston Gray, and they're round. They're not oblong. They're round, like about the size of a basketball. And some of them will have red meat, but most of them will be yellow meat. And the yellow ones have a much stronger watermelon flavor. So that might be the way to go there.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, I hear the same thing for a lot of the, what are they called, the heritage blend watermelons. I guess there's a variety here that is it native to Missouri it's got a deep red fruit, but it does not get nearly as big as a commercial watermelon. I think it tops out about the size of a cantaloupe in the store. You hear the flavor itself is a lot more intense in those than the ones that are made for size or for, you know, commercial distribution and to sit well on store shelves. So there may be something there. My worry with this enterprise, and I think this may be why, like, Michael Fairbrother is taking a pass at this. Once we get enough watermelon, the 100 pounds or so to take it to get a good amount of flavor, is this even cost allowable? We're going to spend a small fortune to get enough watermelon to make this work.
I don't know if Michael ran into the same problem I did, or if maybe he just doesn't like watermelon. You know, that could be another.
Well, I mean,
maybe Jeff, he hates watermelon.
You know, I mean, Jeff's onto something. I mean, the amount of watermelon that it could possibly take in order to get a watermelon you know, a sufficient amount of watermelon flavor. I don't know. Might be worth trying to get a hold of Fairbrother and ask him, you know, mm-hmm. why the hell aren't you doing a watermelon? Tell me why.
I've never heard him explain why. I've only heard him say that he would never do it. So
adamantly. Yeah. He would never do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, that said, though, I did
go ahead, Ryan. You're on topic. I'm not.
I think he said that because he couldn't. He said he couldn't picture it. He said that he needs to be able to visualize what the finished mead's going to be like. And he said with the watermelon, he could never visualize it coming out, you know, in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, he's also said that he's had people mail him bottles of watermelon mead just to say, hey, you know, you couldn't visualize it, but I could. Here it is.
Well, no, I visualized it, but apparently I was apparently blinded by the light because my visualization didn't come to reality.
Yeah.
Somebody mowed the lawn while I was making mine.
Well, I think we're on to something here, so I want to keep pushing forward, and I like this pina colada thing. And although I got some of it written down, Chris, I'm going to task you with a recipe for the pina colada. If you can get it down on paper and send it to me, as an idea, we're going to post it up and we're going to ask people, hey, if you feel like taking a risk, here's a thought for a summertime, 4th of July mead. And let's do this pina colada thing and see if we can't, get somebody out there to do it. I've got a couple of spare empty 1 gallon jugs here. I might throw one together as well. So that's your task.
I think I would probably do a 3 gallon because, 3 gallons of mead along with 3 pounds of shaved coconut would probably fill up a 5 gallon carboy.
Yeah. Okay.
It's probably going to take the full 5 gallon carboy to hold it. So. That's probably how I would go. And don't complain to me when you have to clean all that coconut out of the carboy.
Yeah, I was just about to say, oh, my God, 2 pounds of just 2 gallons worth of coconut. Ah, nasty.
And for $20, I'll give you Chris's phone number. So.
Yeah, don't you dare.
So, okay, so that's Chris's task for next week. Nail it down, get it on paper, work the numbers out, and let's see if we can't come up with something that sounds like it's doable. Hell, I may even give it a shot at that point. I've got a 3 gallon deal. I got a couple of 5 gallons empty sitting here too. For everybody else at the table, I'm gonna have to think a little bit for your task, but I want to keep pushing on this. On this themed recipe thing. So maybe over the next week or so, let's think about a recipe. I like the Halloween thing, Jeff, with the blackberry, blackcurrant, pepper thing, trick or treat thing. I love that.
The idea for the black cherry the blackberry and pepper came from a local barbecue because I'm from Kansas City and we take our barbecue like a religion. But there's a local group that does the barbecue sauce that has like fresh blackberries and fresh raspberries in it, but it's hot. And it is a beautiful thing when those two go together. So I figure if I get that same mix, that really the juicy raspberry or blackberry flavor. And just that like nice slow burn of chipotle, that could be a really wonderful thing.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And with Easter coming up, if anybody can figure out how to get the flavor of those little Cadbury eggs into a mead,
yeah, or anything chocolate.
You know the little eggs with the yellow center and all.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you can figure that out, let me know, please.
Yeah, you know, and in fact, when the wife and I were doing the shopping the other day, I noticed the Easter stuff is already out on the shelf, for crying out loud. For crying out loud. You know? But anyway, so that sounds
well,
good, too.
You know, we did forget to start the show by wishing everyone a happy Fat Tuesday, or for our French-speaking friends, a happy Mardi Gras.
Well, there you go. all right. So we've got our plan for the next week or so. Everybody's been tasked with a project. I want to wrap this thing up just briefly, guys. Jeff, I think it was you that sent an email with a link. And I do recall one of the shows we were talking about oak and, you know, oaking your meads and a style of oaks and a toast of oak and all of that. And I think we briefly talked about, you know, what if you could toast your own wood? Right. And, you sent me a link. This is an article by, I'm going to butcher this guy's last name, Matt Del Fiacco. F-I-A-C-C-O. It's either Fiacco Italiano or Fiacco. I have no idea. But anyway, Matt Del Fiacco, Toasting Your Own Wood Chips. Now, I'll put the link up on our Facebook page. I mean, this guy's dealing with cherry wood, hickory, hard maple, soft maple, red oak, white ash, yellow birch.
He has a little chart there from, and I swear it's from one of the companies that does like smoker woods, but it deals with the level of char, the temperature, and what kind of flavors you can expect at that temperature of char. I mean, if you're at all interested in this, that's worth a quick glance to see, oh, well, that's kind of how this susses out when you're looking at, bear in mind, this chart is just for oak, but it's got to, it's kind of got to have a little bit of similarity for other woods as well, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, vanilla comes out, according to this chart, somewhere around four, let's say between four, looks like about 430 to about 440 degrees, and then goes down from, you start losing that vanilla the hotter it gets, so... Yeah, very interesting. I'm going to put this link up on Facebook. We may even get into a little bit more discussion about it next week when we come back. But I like the idea of perhaps toasting your own wood for some different flavors. Along with that, my 91-year-old uncle, who is always up to something. All right, he's the guy, he's the one that turned me on to this whole sous vide thing, way of cooking. And I'll tell you, if you haven't tried it yet, you got to do this. Well, he turned me on to something else he picked up, and this is one of these little smoker deals. It's a polysilicon. You go to Amazon, look it up on Amazon, home smoker. It's a little handheld-like thing, has a little hose to it. You cook your food, and then you put it on your plate, and you cover the plate with saran wrap. You stick the hose under the saran wrap, fire up this little smoker, and it's like lighting a pipe. It only takes 15 to 20 seconds, and you smoke whatever's on your plate. And he says it's like smoked barbecue like you never had before. So, and he also said that a lot of the bars in Las Vegas, they're doing these smoked drinks with these handheld smokers. So I've never had a smoked drink. I don't know if you guys have had. Ryan, have you ever had a smoked drink before?
I have had a smoked drink. It was an old fashioned that they used one of those little guns on, you know, and hit it with smoke. Yeah. It's I think it's more the novelty of it than anything. I mean, it's not that it was necessarily bad, but it didn't make me see new colors that I had never seen before.
Well, you know what Jeff just said about being from Kansas City and taking your barbecue seriously? Well, I'm very near Memphis, and we take our barbecue seriously, and I think that's just sacrilegious.
To avoid a war between Chris and I related to barbecue and how it should be presented, I will agree. Without getting into detail.
Yes.
Hey, yeah, we're going to leave the barbecue guys alone on this one. That's going to wrap the show for this week. We're glad to be back. We're glad you came along for the ride, too. Hey, we'll be back next week. We're going to continue this discussion on themed meats, like holiday, summertime, July 4th, that kind of thing. Got some pretty good things going here, I think. A couple of recipes coming your way next week or so. And then we might even talk a little bit more about the smoke thing, which is very intriguing. Ryan, thank you very much. I sincerely appreciate your tasting notes on the stuff that I gave you to drink, good or bad. I love it. And I'm glad that you guys had a good trip out there to California. With that, what do you boys say we come on back to the table next week and do this all over again? Think that's a good idea?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.